Welcome, everyone, to the Spectacular Spider-Man podcast, Sal Buscema era. We cover every single issue that Sal Buscema drew alongside writers JMD Mateus, Peter David, and Gary Conway. And tonight, we begin the coverage of Inferno with our special guest, Kelly, the Spectacular Spider-Girl cosplayer and host of the Mayday, Make Mine, Made It. What's the proper name?
Mayday. You can use this hashtag on Instagram. Because I own it, but then I lost the password, so I don't use it on Instagram. But I'm also at Make Mine Mayday on Twitter, and you can find me on all the podcatchers at Make Mine Mayday, as well as the Crawl Space, and sometimes the Spidey Dude Experience. Yeah,
I think my issue comes before yours, Kelly. Right?
I believe so. Yes, because I have web.
Okay.
And yes.
All right. So
I have the one that's on Marvel Unlimited.
Gotcha. So this issue also introduces us to, I mean, he's been in the book before, he's been in the comic books prior to this, but in terms of this podcast, we are introduced to Harry Osborn, who was created by Stan Lee and Steve Ditko back in Amazing Spider-Man number 31 back in 1965, and he would eventually become the Green Goblin in Amazing Spider-Man number 136, the American Son in Amazing Spider-Man number 597, and something in current Spider books called Kindred that I still don't completely understand. I'm sure Kelly has covered.
He's a demon. I could totally get into that. That can be a later conversation because it does not apply here where he is still alive.
Yes. Harry Osborn is the son of the late, well, currently living in Europe, Norman Osborn. And after a spout of a drug problem, which occurred in the famous comic code less comic book, Harry Osborn was in and out of having drug problems and all sorts of other mental health issues, mostly caused by his son of a bitch father, Norman Osborn. And he would eventually become the Green Goblin, give up being the Green Goblin, and become the Green Goblin again one last time to defeat a psychologist fake Green Goblin named Bart. And Harry has been cured ever since and living a peaceful and happy life with his wife, Liz Allen, who is an old flame of Peter Parker's back in high school, and their little son, Normie. He is currently the head of Oscorp Industries and living the suburban lifestyle. As we meet, the issue begins, which is... I don't have the issue in front of me to go over the credits.
146.
Credits for this issue. Jerry Conway on script. Sal Buscema on art. Rick Parker on letters. Barb Sharon on colors. Jim Scalarup on editor. And Tom DeFalco, editor-in-chief. We begin the issue with Spider-Man enjoying his day after defeating Mysterio in Amazing Spider-Man number 311, where there was some wacky shenanigans going on there. And he is attacked by a fan monster, which he stops. And then he heads over to his apartment for a quick change before Christy and MJ come home. Robbie, still recovering from his injuries caused by Tombstone, continues his exercise and talking to his wife about his pending trial with Tombstone. The detective that has been working the Lobo Brothers case with Ben Urich comes across another bloody message for the Kingpin, which he delivers to the Arranger, who is the right-hand man of the Kingpin right now. Speaking of the Lobo Brothers, Eduardo Lobo runs into Gloria Grant outside the Daily Bugle and saves her life, and they decide to go to lunch together, which is going to become a big plot line in the Spider books coming up. Harry starts having nightmares about weird things involving goblins and other strangeness that is a recurring psychosis coming back from his time as the Green Goblin, maybe, while the Hobgoblin stalks his neighborhood. Peter's in the shower thinking about all the strange happenings happening in New York and realizing it may not be connected to Mysterio. When he gets out of the shower, Christy, Mary Jane's young cousin, is waiting there with a towel for Peter, and he feels pretty embarrassed by it, realizing they got to get Christy out of the apartment because it's going to make him very hard to be Spider-Man. Peter gets a call from Harry and goes to visit him at the factory, and the entire factory comes to life and attacks him. Peter switches to Spider-Man and helps Harry save Harry and everyone else at Oscorp, but Oscorp chemical plant is ruined, and we see the Hobgoblin in the distance. When Harry goes home to Liz, the ghost of his father, very much like Spider-Man 2, the movie, if you remember seeing those type of images at the very end, is taunting Harry that he must become the Green Goblin once again. The art in this issue, again, is Sal Buscema's best work with the fan monster attacking Peter and its snake-like ability. Just the way it, you know, just flies around is unbelievable. The Inferno storyline is one of the big reasons I wanted to do this podcast, because Sal's artwork is absolutely amazing. The way he stretches the lines out and how fluid Spider-Man is and the way he looks, it's unbelievable. Kelly, were you a huge fan of this entire era of Sal's artwork on Spidey?
Of course. I mean, it's Sal. All of my original pages that I own are actually all inked by Sal. Although, of course, you know, most of them are from Ron Friends, because he's also amazing and my favorite. But they're kind of a package deal sometimes. So, and they're amazing. No, I agree. To me, the art is clean and just consistent. And to me, consistency is key with any comic book art. You never really want anybody to look like their faces are melting or something's crazy is going on, because if we're gonna hang around Christy being creepy, I totally get it. She's supposed to basically be like Punky Brewster, and I guess in the 80s sitcom world that would be okay, but like, it's not okay. She's literally staring at her cousin's husband, who is naked in the shower. And the fact that Peter's like, because we see this a little bit, his spider sense is off, so he doesn't even recognize that she's there.
Right.
And it's just, the thing is, someone really should have talked to Christy about boundaries.
Somebody needs to have a conversation with Christy about a lot of things coming up soon, which I don't know if we get into it spectacular or if it happens in Amazing.
Well, she also talks about stealing Peter away from MJ as well.
Yeah. Right. She's those Tom Holland fangirl stalkers. So I live in Atlanta, and you know, they film a lot of Marvel movies here. Believe me, I have had to have words with some women, normally are a lot older, at least double Christy's age, which makes it worse, is you know, they'll literally find out that what hotel he's at and stalk the lobby for days on end to find him. And I'm like, the boy is what, 22, 23? And I know I shouldn't call him a boy, but no, he's a boy. And that's the way I see her, is like, this is the same, like, it's the same energy, and it's just weird. It's gross. Just stop.
Right.
It's not cute.
Tom Holland holds the record as the only actor who was actually a teenager to be cast as Spider-Man, because he was 17 years old when he got cast in Civil War filmed Civil War at 17. And then when it came out, he had turned 18.
Yeah.
And he's supposed to be playing 15 in that movie. And then I guess he gets killed by Thanos at 16, I guess.
He's still 16. I mean, the way the movie is set up, he's still 16. Blips, exactly. Blips don't count. That's how the MCU is doing their sliding age scale. It's just they're blipping people out of existence.
That's your new hashtag, Kelly. Blips don't count.
Blips don't count.
After Robbie's heart to heart with his wife, which she's pretty pissed about him because he's pretty much going to just turn over, you know, in court on Tombstone, Harry starts seeing this face. Whose face is it? This is issue 146. The seeds are planted here for the upcoming, like, 40 issues later, Child Within storyline, where has Harry go completely nuts again, becoming the Green Goblin, and it will eventually lead to his not quite death, or possibly his real death, who knows, with current issues of Amazing, the way they're talking about it in issue 200. But yeah, the seeds are planted in this issue for Harry's descent back into madness. It had been a really, really long time since we'd seen the Green Goblin in comics. It over a decade, I think, believe, right, Kelly?
I think so, but at the same time, I mean, technically, I don't think we've seen an Osborn as the Goblin longer than that.
Right. Bart, the battle with Bart, the psychologist, was the last time we saw Harry as the Green Goblin.
Yeah. Okay.
And then 40 issues later, that's when Ned Leeds or Roderick Kingsley or whoever became the Hobgoblin. Yeah, well, that's a whole mess we'll unpack in Web of. We get a little glimpse of the Hobgoblin flying away as he is clearly spying on Harry just before Peter's shower incident, and then we get the Starlight Room. I'm assuming this is a club owned by the Kingpin with everyone murdered by the Lobo Brothers. Which, when we get to the Lobo Brothers issue, man, is that a horror movie
Yeah.
Comic book.
Sweet. Yeah,
that is the nightmare Gloria has coming up is straight out of a horror movie. It is just graphic. And it was like the book that made me just buy up every issue of Spectacular. We also get to see a lot of the Daily Bugle staff at this time period. You know, it's not just Jonah and Robbie that work at the Bugle. We also had Gloria. We had Kate Cushing. We had Ben Urich. I was so pissed on the Daredevil TV series when they killed off Ben the first season.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what the hell? That's a huge, important character to Marvel Comics. I mean, it's like the Hulk movie not having Rick Jones. That pissed me off so much.
The Netflix ones aren't canon anymore, so it's
yeah.
I don't know what they'll do.
Right. Daredevil has reverted back to Marvel, which I'm assuming that means his entire cast of characters, which I guess includes Ben Urich because he was on the Daredevil show. So we could hopefully see maybe Ben popping up in the next Spider-Man movie covering the, you know, whatever the plot line is going to be with Peter's identity revealed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we already know his Daredevil's character is going to be in the next Spider-Man.
That's a rumor. That's not a rumor.
I'm not feeding in any of that nonsense.
I'll tell you what can be confirmed and not confirmed. That's why there's too many rumors and not enough actual fact going on right now, including the little staff shirts going around that are fake.
Right.
Yeah.
So, Chris, I have actually a question for you because this is something I've been wondering, and I feel like I just ask it. You've obviously reaped such praise about Sal and whatnot. Have you ever got a chance to meet him? Has he ever been at a convention and you were able to meet him at? I just, you know, I don't know if he's ever been in one I've ever been at, but I figured.
No, I've met his daughter a couple of times. Mm-hmm. I believe it was his daughter. And I've gotten to know JMD Mateus, and I've asked him to reach out to Sal for me to put me in touch with him. Mm-hmm. He said he hasn't talked to Sal in a few years, but I would love to have Sal obviously on this podcast. I mean, he is up there in his age, so it's just a matter of whether or not he does them. I know he's been on the Twitter shows.
He does them. He's more than happy to. The only thing I would suggest is if you really want to use StreamYard or any kind of video streaming service to definitely have a tech day. I might be speaking slightly from experience.
Okay. Getting back to the issue at hand, because we still have to get to Web. The factory coming to life with it like snaking around everywhere, this would be like a dream come true playset to be able to make with Spider-Man like action figures and Harry would be an absolute fun. And it just Spider-Man versus the factory coming to life is something that always struck me as the most oddest imaging of the entire book. And it clearly continues to set up Harry to really go off the deep end at some point, but he doesn't quite in what's going to happen next week. You think Harry's just going to revert right to becoming the Goblin, and maybe that's the seeds they were planting. I didn't read these books until much later on in my life. So Harry had already died. You know, Maximum Carnage had just happened. When I got around to finally reading these old issues, I could see reading these issues in 1988, they are definitely planting the seeds that like, oh yeah, Harry's going to become the Goblin again, and it's going to be bad for Peter because, like his father, he's going to remember who Peter is, and it's going to be hell, you know, and a nightmare. And they don't do that, and we'll get into it next week's issue with Amazing Spider-Man number 312. At the end of the issue, he sees the image of the Goblin in the mirror. And at this point, Norman Osborn is dead. He had been killed by his own hand. Like in the movie, the Clone Saga would reveal that he got off the morgue slab and flew off to Europe. In fact, he even met up with Dr. Octopus at one point in a retcon issue. you know, and other villains of Spider-Man's lore that were like, Norman Osborn, aren't you dead? And he's like, shh, let's have a drink. This continues right into the next issue of Web of Spider-Man. Kelly, you have a plot synopsis, issue 47.
All right. Okay, so I did do a little bit of a background on it. Obviously, it says the Hobgoblin returns. Web of Spider-Man 47 also says an Inferno continues, The Awakening. It was $1 when it came out. February 1989 cover date, published sometime around December 1988. I couldn't find the actual day. The current average price for the comic is about $8. CGC graded is about 80. So since it does cost $95 for you to have your comic graded, I would suggest don't do that to yourself and find the $8 one. Story by
it costs $95 to get it graded?
Some of them, yeah.
Yeah, CGC is overpriced, overrated, complete bullshit. I'm sorry.
Yeah. So I'm just saying.
I agree with that statement.
It's literally being sold at a loss right now. So just saying, don't, you know, go look for the ones that are not in the plastic. Story by Jerry Conway, art by Alex Suvak and Keith Williams, cover by Alex Suvak. The story continues from Spectacular Spider-Man 146, The Hobgoblin and the Amazing Spider-Man wage a fierce battle at the Osborn Chemical Plant, and Inferno Chaoses is the actual official tagline from the original like previews for it, which is weird because that doesn't make sense, but you know, anyway, we do have Tom DeFalco as editor-in-chief. So the story is called The Face in the Mirror. Strange things are happening in New York City. So while Hobby and Spider-Man fight, a monster made of rubble comes out to squeeze the life out of Spider-Man, quite literally. He breaks free, but Hobby got away. Peter is thinking about how strange it is that his spider sense didn't warn him about the fan vent or the dirt monster or Christie. We kind of cut to the mall, which is what you do in the 80s, is go to the mall.
Yep.
Glory is walking with her new boy toy head over heels for Eduardo as they walk through the mall, as one does in the 80s. And Ben Urk, Erich, and Joy see them at the cafe, on their cafe break, their Starbucks run. Erich is about to give Ed's name to Joy, because his name is Eduardo Lobo,
yes,
right? And yep, he is basically the Wolf Man.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert. He's a straight
up werewolf. Now here's the thing. Are the Lobo brothers mutants, or are they mystically supernatural werewolves? I think
they're mystically supernatural. They don't count as mutants here, but God knows what has happened throughout the years in comics.
We'll get there. We got that issue coming up.
Yeah, because, I mean, well, my thing is that sometimes X-Men takes everybody that's magical, and then sometimes they're like, no, and in fact, actually, half of you mutants are no longer mutants.
Thank you, Scarlet Witch.
You know, who knows? But yeah, so there's that fun fact that we are about to see a werewolf sometime in the future. But as Ben is about to tell Joy who Ed really is, the mall escalators just jump out as they please and bring the mall come crashing down. Joy saves Ben and realizes something is very, very wrong with New York City. I wonder why she thinks this, because, you know, this seems like a normal Tuesday. Peter makes it back for breakfast at Aunt May's boarding house, and they ask Aunt May to look over Christy after her parents surprised MJ with this European trip and to watch her cousin.
I wonder why she thinks this.
We're getting an echo somehow.
Normal Tuesday.
Yeah, I'm not.
Peter makes it back for breakfast at Aunt May's.
Sounds like somebody has a video playing.
Yeah, someone's got it playing. Sorry, who's playing it? Okay, all right.
The demons.
Yes, the Inferno. It's taking over on computer.
It's the Inferno. Oh my goodness. So yeah.
It's
so
everything I've ever downloaded all over the internet. No.
No. All right. So all right. So we start to see the binging habits of Christy here, and kind of shaking up her place of living again probably doesn't help her eating disorder. But MJ runs off to the photo shoot.
Gave it away.
Sorry.
No, that's fine. Everyone who's tuning in, Christy has an eating disorder. It goes nowhere. And we never, ever hear or see Christy ever again when it finally gets resolved.
You do see Christy again in Spider-Girl.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. By the way, we never mentioned we were in Spectacular. This probably would have made more sense to bring up, but you're still on the podcast. Who's one of the creators of Spider-Girl?
Sal is an inker. He didn't actually create the characters, but he was involved in a lot of the plot-making team. Because it's Tom DeFalco. He wasn't a part of the What If. No, because it was drawn by Ron Frenz, and it was inked by, I'm going to butcher his name, Sekovich?
Really? Okay. Oh, yeah. Wow, yeah.
Yeah.
He's going to be on Radio Horror at some point in the future.
Nice. Sal inked some key issues of Spider-Girl early on and kind of stuck with with Ron. And then as the story continues, that's when Sal was inking almost everything. Definitely. But he didn't start off on it. He wasn't off originally on 105.
And this, by the way, Hobgoblin is based off Ron Frenz's design of Hobgoblin.
Yes, it is. All right, let me get back to this.
Yes,
we got to get back. Yeah. We are definitely, we keep popcorning.
No, that's fine. Okay. We got 10 minutes, so go.
I'm gonna go as fast as I can. All right. So MJ runs off to a photo shoot and Peter stops by Harry's. Liz is frantic and jumpy like Liz always is and tells Peter that Harry has been in the attic all night. So Pete goes up to talk as the hobgoblin looms in the distance. Harry is just a straight up maniac. He is completely manic as all get out and yells at Peter as baby Normie screams a terrorized scream out because the hobgoblin, who has been looming over in the distance watching Peter, is now throwing goblin bombs at the toddler to find Harry Osborn. Harry whacks Hobby with a rake and sets up a strange innuendo that Peter is just so happy about. Because to me, it's low-hanging fruit, but let Spidey be Spidey.
Yeah.
And as I lose my place. All right, so Spider-Man tries to get the frazzled Harry and fam to run to safety, but Hobgoblin isn't giving up that easily as he needs Norman's goblin formula. Spidey mentions that this new hobby isn't Ned Leeds, and of course Hobgoblin then calls Ned Leeds a loser, and this Hobgoblin is a downright scuzzball. So we might know who it is. Harry decides to just give Hobgoblin some information about his father's safe, not exactly sure what's going on, and feels like he should have done more to protect his family. Peter heads to the Osborn offices. Meanwhile, at the Bugle, Ben goes to Jonah to tell him about the city going insane, and Jonah thinks it's doomsday. So again, is this New York City 1988? Or New York City 2020. We don't know. Sliding time scale. So Harry goes back to the attic and starts looking for something. Determined by his self-directed anger and fear over not being able to protect his family like his father could, he finds the goblin costume. It's time for Harry to face the man in the mirror himself as the goblin.
Now, I wanted to point out that over in your show, his son, I think, has had up until, the book ended and it's multiple mini series and little, half stories that they put in the Spider-Man family. Normie Osborn, Harry's son, has the best arc out of Spider-Girl.
Oh, yeah. Well, I love him as a character. He has the best redemption arc out of all of the Osborns for sure. And he sticks to it.
Yeah.
But you can still see a lot of that influence from those in now the 616, because like when Normie is the goblin child in current comics, there's a little side story where his grandfather literally tells him to kidnap another child. So he does, and tells him to eat him, because this is like when Norman's, all consumed by carnage, and Normie, even with the carnage stuff on him, puts the child in a library and goes, climb out that window so I don't have to do something to you. You have 30 seconds. And that, that kind of sets up like how his psyche really is. He doesn't want to have to do it, but he feels that he's bound by fate because that is the Osborn way. So he tries to negate it as much as possible. And a lot of that came out of the mentality they gave Normie in MC2.
As a quick character profile, as we're introduced to the Hobgoblin for the first time during this run of Inferno, he first appeared as originally supposed to be Ned Leeds until Roger Stern left the book, and then it was supposed to be Broderick Kingsley, a character who was a fashion designer modeling Mary Jane Watson and other characters, and was supposed to be built up to be a bigger character before the identity revealed was supposed to happen. But Roger Stern, the writer of the book at the time, left Amazing Spider-Man and they made it Ned Leeds, the character from the movies that you know, as well as Betty Brant's husband and a longtime Spider-Man character who'd been around since the Ditko era. He was assassinated, and Jason Philip McIndale, who was a character called Jack-O-Lantern 1, there's been like five of them now, became the current Hobgoblin. McIndale has no superpowers. He's just a hitman. And Roderick Kingsley found Goblin formula, stuck it in himself, and became like super powerful. Harry destroyed the formula or whatever after that debacle happened and made sure no one could ever find it. So Macandale doesn't have any superpowers whatsoever, and that's why he keeps getting his ass handed to him, and that's what leads into what he does in our next episode. But where did Macandale first appear? Was it like in Machine Man as Jack-o'-Lantern?
I can't remember off the top of my head. I think you're close.
And Macandale was murdered by Kingsley in Hobgoblin Lives when Stern came back after the Clone Saga to be like, okay, this is who the Hobgoblin really was. Retcon! Yeah. Okay, and Kingsley ran around in your Spider-Girl, correct?
Yes, Kingsley is the Hobgoblin in most of Spider-Girl, like the only Hobgoblin in Spider-Girl's run. He just kind of popping up.
One of the best things they did in Spider-Girl was with the good Green Goblin, Phil Urich, was a great story arc. What Dan Slott did to him was a bad story arc.
Well, I mean, that could be said about a lot of that.
And Dan Slott would resurrect Jason Philip Macandale in some weird Clone Saga way, as well as a bunch of other dead characters like Gwen Stacy and Ben Reilly, but we won't get to that. Alex Subiak's artwork in this issue is fantastic. What do you think of it, Kelly, compared to Sal?
I mean, so Sal to me is one of your classic artists, and there's nothing else that's ever going to compare to it. But I think this is, again, it's clean, it's consistent, it's that classic style. There you go.
Kelly, can you name everyone at every one of the boarders at Aunt May's boarding house besides Nathan Lebunsky?
No.
We do make fun of the boarders in the very first episode of this podcast. The Mr. Popchick, the guy who pulled the gun on the guys on the subway and blew them away. In the issue after the Sinister storyline, May would kick him out of the house, and we would never see him ever again.
Yeah. I mean, I honestly forgot that she had boarders.
Yeah, this actually, you want to hear something really funny? She started this whole boarding house plan in the first appearance of the Hobgoblin.
Mm-hmm.
Her and Nathan decided to start taking in boarders right around that Roger Stern two-parter where Hobgoblin's first introduced.
She's the mastermind behind all of the Hobgoblin stuff. That's how it gets funded.
The original two-part issues of the Hobgoblin, honestly, I think are one of my favorite mysteries of Spider-Man because it's a guy that Spider-Man lets get away. He doesn't let him get away. He can't find him. And it's another one of those, oh no, it's the whole Uncle Ben, I let the guy get away and he killed Uncle Ben story, because that guy would find the secret lair of the Green Goblin and sell the information off to a mystery shadow person whose face we never see. And at the end of the issue, he alters the Green Goblin's costume to become the Hobgoblin. And we don't know who he is. And then in the next issue, he tries to take on Spider-Man and doesn't realize how powerful Spider-Man is. And it says at the end, oh my God, I just went through the ringer. I am exhausted. I'm a 40, 50-year-old man who just tried to take on a 20-year-old Spider-Man.
I mean, at this point, he's been 20-plus years old for, 40 years?
Yeah, I think... When I met with the current writer of Spider-Man, Nick Spencer, at Comic-Con a couple of years ago, I asked him, how old do you think Spider-Man is right now, the way you're writing him with his reuniting of Mary Jane and stuff? I'm like, I'm going to say Spider-Man is 25 in my what I have going on, because he has to have been around for a decade for all these adventures that have taken place. And the Fantastic Four will always have been around at least a little bit longer than Spider-Man.
Yeah, I mean, I think the idea, at least the way it seems to be for editing and other side stories, I mean, he's around 28, 29 years old. Maybe 30, like you might even be able to say they're all in around 30 at this point, but that would be the tail end of it, just because like it is a very late millennial lifestyle, and you know, he's in grad school. So I kind of feel like grad school at 25 is too young, slightly, especially after I'm taking those gap years.
What's something that really stands out for you in this issue before I get to a couple of mine?
Yeah, I always love a good Liz and Harry story. And this is kind of one of those classic ones where Liz is frantic and Harry is manic. And we don't touch on that enough. Like, that's literally their energies the entire time. So it's always kind of fun to always revisit that, because
I really like, you know, the Liz stuff that happened recently where she was, hanging out with, she employed Spider-Man 2099 Miguel O'Hara for a little while, mm-hmm. and she was the boss of Eddie Brock, Venom.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I like new Liz, but I like old Liz too. I do want to point out too, though, you said flame of Peter's. They never got together. They crushed on each other, but they never got together.
Right. She did admit in the graduation of high school issue that she had a longtime crush on him. And he was like, why didn't you tell me all these years? And that was the last appearance of Liz Allen until, you know, what, issue like 170 something years later?
Yeah. So that's what I'm saying. There was no flame. There was no flame. They just.
No, there was no flame.
Signals. Yeah.
And then she would, oh my God, they tried to put her on the 90s cartoon series, and she barely has an appearance here or there. And then all of a sudden, when Harry becomes the Green Goblin and goes nuts and interrupts the wedding of Peter and Mary Jane, Liz is like, I thought you and I could get together, Harry. And you're like, where is this coming from? I know who this character is, and people like Kelly know who this character is, but nobody watching this show who's never read Spider-Man has any idea who this blonde chick is who's got the hots for Harry Osborn all of a sudden. It was the worst writing of that show.
It was a kid's show. And if they had pulled a comic at the time, they would have seen Liz.
What she said.
The Hobgoblin's little death skull gas thing is kind of cool. We don't really get to see that almost ever in any of the other versions of Hobgoblin, except for these issues with Inferno. He employs a whole lot of other really horrific tricks coming up soon, which we will get to when he becomes more and more of a demon. Also, the appearance of the Empire State Building as it is altering, you could really fit this into where it's happening in the X-Men books, because the Empire State Building is the constant piece that appears in all of Inferno.
Well, and it's growing.
Changing, yes. As it's growing and altering and looking more demonic, you can figure out where the tie-ins happen with Inferno. And there's two giant Inferno omnibuses. One contains every one of the X titles, including X-Terminus and Excalibur. And then there's the crossover hardcover, which has the amazing Spider-Man Todd McFarlane cover as its cover.
Yeah.
And this would begin the Harry Osborn good guy Green Goblin storyline for a little while. I really got to ask JMD Mateus next time he comes on, why did they decide to go make Harry the bad guy again? Because after this and Amazing and two issues of Web of, Harry's a good guy. In fact, Harry also remembers Peter as Spider-Man, but is like, go get him, buddy. You're my friend. Spider-Man's Peter, you know, but I don't care. He's doing good things. He didn't kill my dad. But when JMD Mateus comes on during the Child Within, Harry goes full on nuts, sees a ghost of his dad. Must kill Spider-Man. Ah!
The thing is, there's seeds of it right here. He feels like his dad would have protected his family, even though we all know his dad didn't give two craps about the family. Like, because Norman is a psychopath. The thing is Harry is literally, he is an abused kid. I mean, he is psychologically abused, and this was before any of the goblin serum or anything else going on. He is a psychologically abused kid. So at any time, he might somewhat seem okay, any little trigger is going to snap him right back into that fawning period for his dad. Because that's the way I've always taken that, is that just somewhere along the line, he reverted back to type, because that's what he's used to, and that's his safe place is right. To fawn.
Do you want to get into it real quick, since we're at the end of the episode, and try to explain what the deal is with Kindred? Is Kindred a demon that's inherited Harry's dead body?
Okay. So I don't know. So I don't think it's a dead body necessarily. And obviously, this is something for Nick Spencer to tell us, because I don't know. This is me just guesstimating. But what I've taken it as, way, way, way back with One More Day, when MJ whispers and it makes her own separate caveat to the deal, we all assumed, you know, even though they said it was something else later, we all assumed it was for Harry to come back. Here's the thing, though, is that Harry's soul did not consent to this. And we know Harry's soul has been in hell and being tortured all these years. What I assume is basically this was Mephisto's way of, one, watching them and making sure Peter and MJ didn't get back together, because it is still Harry even if it is demonic in his own way. He's got his own agenda, his own mindset of doing things.
Uh-huh.
But his soul has been turned demonic just from his time there. And he is angry because he didn't agree to come back and to have to then pretend that everything's okay when it's not. Because that's one thing that Harry can't. Just has never been able to fully do. The thing is like right now, I feel like we're looking at something half baked and we're expecting it to be this amazing thing. And so I'm waiting for like the true reveal and the true discussion of Kindred, which is why I'm getting annoyed that we're doing 10,000 other side stories before we focus in on this.
Time, God, Tombstone.
But I still have some hope that at least something along my idea of theories will probably happen, or something crazy wonderful that doesn't, you know, I might not be seeing happens. Just as long as it works and it makes sense to the story. And I feel like right now the only way you can make sense of him becoming Kindred is he's been Kindred this whole time. He's never been alive or fully human. This is a demonic entity, but this is what Harry has become because he was basically taken out. Because it's kind of like that Buffy thing where, like, you know, where Buffy, when she came back and she's like, no, I was happy. Not saying that he was happy, but just like he had accepted his fate here and then he gets pulled out and he doesn't know if this is real or if he's going to be able to stay anymore, if that makes sense. And he has his own agenda that I don't necessarily think is good or bad. It's his own agenda.
And Nick Spencer, I mean, is very much about continuity. He has done a great job of like everything with GOG. That's all that happened. All that GOG stuff happened. I mean, he's really great about trying to make sure everyone's continuity happened like the way it was written. There was the retcon that Norman Osborn came back into the country, scooped up Harry's body or whatever. He was in a goblin-like coma, whatever, and purged him of the goblin formula while he was in Europe, and that's why Harry came back. The Mephisto turning into a bird and picking the lock, you know, retcon of going back in time to change events so Peter and Mary Jane will get married. The ongoing thing of Kindred is happening right now with Kingpin constantly talking to Kindred about the Tablet of Time and Tablet of Life to try and bring back Vanessa Fisk, which is what that's alluding to.
Well, I believe Kindred wants those for himself. I just can't tell you exactly why.
At the end of the Valentine's Day issue of Spider-Man, Mephisto, whenever somebody remembers that it happened, Mephisto is in jail in Las Vegas under the guard of whoever is in charge of hell right now, Johnny Blaze, Ghost Rider. And Doctor Strange goes to visit Mephisto to be like, what is wrong with Peter Parker? And we're going to play a long game with that until issue number 900, I guess, is the next big milestone for Amazing.
I don't know. I think we'll get bits and pieces before then. It's just we've still got to finish the Life Tablet situation, and then we've got the Chameleon situation. Yep. Mm-hmm. I'm just mad because I'm like, can we just not deal with the Chameleon? Let's finish the Life Tablet just because GOG is great, and I would like more GOG. GOG bless us all.
After that,
we need I need some more story, and it like I take it also like I am a big Osborne fan. I love the family. I love that whole just the richness of the story and the depth that is in there. And there is still something really, really great with this setup for Harry. Let's not bungle that setup. Let's actually sit there and dive deep and actually look at it and talk about it and get into it versus let's go around and do boom, 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 because editorial says they need a new suit and they need XYZ. Not make the good story that is here make sense. And that's what I'm scared of, because unfortunately that has been Marvel's MO for the last 10 years.
Yeah.
Has been let's do everything flashy and markety wise, but let's not focus on the story. And I don't like that.
And they're really trying to like burn their way through these micro story arcs, because we have Amazing coming out 3 times a month again with these story arcs, with the GOG and the Tablet of Time coming up, and then the Chameleon. Currently, we're not doing Tablet of Time yet. We're doing Tombstone's love romance with his kid and Robbie's kid, which we went into a lot during the Tombstone arc we just covered. Thank God we have Joe Kelly and Chris Bacalo's Nonstop Spider-Man, because good God, that is so much fun, and I'm not bogged down by nonsense of Kindred.
I loved the story. I am not a fan of the artwork, because again, that is where it's not consistent.
You don't like Chris's Bacalo.
Yeah, no, his faces melt, and it's just inconsistent art. And also, right. There's a color in that team. There is a coloring issue with the character Kelly, because when she was first shown, she was actually very much a lot darker skinned than what we see in Nonstop. Not that I should be complaining, because it looks like they ripped off one of my photos with my Mayday wig on, but.
Oh,
but I thought it was fun. I was like, why am I bugging Peter? Like, I could, yes, Peter, I could Google myself. Like, the answer is myself. Wait, why am I doing drugs? I don't do drugs. This is not me. But yeah, so that was kind of, you know, it's fun to have fun with that. But at the same time, I could see where somebody might get upset by that coloring issue. And then again, to me, I'm a sucker for consistent artwork. Just give me consistent art.
And over in Kingpin, Chameleon, we have Teresa coming back.
Yes.
Okay.
Not a fan, I can see by the sneer on your face.
Here's my thing. If Teresa was just like a little side character from S.H.I.E.L.D. and we maybe like a cousin or another clone or something, I'd be cool. I'm not okay with this whole, yeah, she's your sister and she grew up in S.H.I.E.L.D. and no one ever told you are your Uncle Ben or Aunt May at all. No one told any family members whatsoever. Doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, and considering how many retcons they've had with the part with Peter's parents, not counting the, you know, they came back from the dead, but they're really robots and so on.
Maybe Teresa's a robot. Maybe that's what it is, and we'll find that out later, because at some point they're gonna have to do something with her. And
the thing is that bugs me is like his personal, he doesn't have like a close relationship with Nick Fury, but Nick Fury respects Spider-Man. He knows Spider-Man is Peter Parker back when Nick Fury was not the man living on the wall working for the Watcher and that whole nonsense. You're right. At no point he said, by the way, you have a sister working in S.H.I.E.L.D. Don't tell anyone that I told you, but she works for us. I mean, you're right. It doesn't make it. I like it, but then I don't like it. I mean, I'm totally believable that they had, you know, a baby that they gave away because they're agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and they never told Peter and they never told Aunt May. That's fine. I will believe that because they're secret agents. You know what I mean? They got pregnant when they weren't supposed to and they had to give the baby up, you know? But I don't believe this whole like S.H.I.E.L.D. knew but didn't tell Peter. Really, Wolverine didn't tell Peter. Wolverine's worked for S.H.I.E.L.D. for a bunch of times and he's got a, you know, Richard and Mary Parker, according to Untold Tales.
But I mean, to me, Teresa's that baby that's really, really from that horrible miniseries where Peter is actually Aunt May's kid.
Oh,
I can't remember. Trouble. Oh. There we go. Trouble. Maybe it wasn't Peter. It's Teresa, and that's how it's all gonna connect.
I tried to explain Marvels or Trouble or whatever it was called to somebody. It rates right there with me trying to explain. So did you know Mary Jane died because she had sex with Peter and her body was riddled with cancer? Because you know what happens when you have sex with somebody? Gross.
You know that people come up to me and tell me that at like Dragon Con and stuff, just because I'm in a spider suit or I'm in Mary Jane. They love telling me about that story. And I'm like, yes, it's funny. Thank you.
Gross.
Yep.
Why would you go up to a cosplayer and tell them the honestly, what? I like the story for
you. Yeah.
When you get to that's disgusting.
You haven't seen my direct messages.
Oh, I can imagine. There's a whole episode we could get into, like the ups and downs of being a female cosplayer and being a female podcaster. But that is not Spectacular Spider-Man.
That is not the show, and that is okay.
Yeah, I've got a fantastic female co-host that came on this podcast for Goth Girl Horror, and we are dealing with a whole bunch of fun things and stuff like that every once in a while. But we trudge on and we continue the podcast.
Yeah,
thank you so much, Kelly, for coming on for these two issues of the beginning of Inferno. We are covering Inferno for the next like 4 weeks because there's just so much to cover with Spectacular and the other Spider titles.
Hey, I had a lot of fun. I love kind of diving deep. So hopefully my breakdown was deep enough for someone who might not be able to find it, but you can find it on Marvel Unlimited. So It's not like Spec that doesn't get enough love. Web of Spider-Man is on Marvel Unlimited, guys.
And I don't have the omnibus with me, but it is also collected in the Inferno crossover omnibus, as well as all the other tie-ins to Inferno that are not X-related. And again, right on the cover of the omnibus is that beautiful Green Goblin versus Hobgoblin Todd McFarlane artwork, recolored, and it looks beautiful. And the entire art in that whole story is just amazing to see Todd draw Hobgoblin. Before he's a demon, by the way, that issue we're covering next week, Hobgoblin is still not yet a demon, and Todd McFarlane draws him like he is. He gives him normal teeth. You know he's a demon when he's got like venom teeth. And his tongue.
I mean, he's a demon on the inside.
Right. It's funny. If you read Scream, King in Black, or whatever, the Dima Goblin is doing what he did over in the adjective-less Spider-Man issues 6 and 7, where Spidey and Ghost Spider fight him, with kidnapping children and altering them and doing weird things to them and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
I was kind of hoping Adam would show back up like towards the end to team up with Scream to be like, do you remember me? I was the child that you screwed up my face, and now I'm back to like guide you back into the light, and so on and so forth. And Scream just be like, I don't know who you are, kid. Not Scream, Shriek. The Shriek demon.
Shriek,
goblin.
Yeah.
Shriek, yeah. Yeah, sorry.
Okay.
Man, trying to explain the Scream King in Black tie-in to anybody because of how many different people are different other people in that book. Dima Goblin, Shriek, Andy, Scream, and then trying to explain who Andy is and who Shriek and Dima Goblin are. Jesus Christ.
King in Black is its own... it's its own thing, and I hope it ends slightly.
Yeah, did you just see the announcement? There's a Carnage symbiote crossover event coming up.
It's the symbiotes. It's the thing that never ends.
Yeah, right.
It goes on and on, my friends.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Kelly, where can people find you?
You can find me on Instagram at kmcdaniel28. Twitter at Make Mine Mayday. You can use the hashtag Make Mine Mayday or check that out and see what I am up to. You can also find me on the Spider-Man Crawl Space. I am on the main show as well as our Patreon-only satellites. So if you do want to hear my opinions about stuff like King in Black, Savage Avengers, that is on Patreon for Crawl Space. And I'm also on Spidey Dude Network with my own show, Make Mine Mayday, all about the best character of all Spider-Man, Mayday Parker, Spider-Girl.
Not counting what happens later on.
Well, we 2014 never happened. We lived in an assimilation, and it's not real.
I do love Mayday Spider-Man, and the Children of Spider-Man gets bigger and bigger. We have Ben from the J.J. Abrams. We have Venom's She-Venom from FX. We have Mayday. We have... The little redhead girl, whatever her name
Annie.
Was.
Annie, we're not calling her what Slott originally gave her, which was Anna May.
Yeah.
Because if you're Southern, it just sounds like Anna May.
Right. We have the unborn May Parker from the end of the Clone Saga. So that's number 5. And I'm sure there's a 6th spider kid out there.
She wasn't unborn. Hold on. She wasn't unborn.
Oh.
She was born. Norman took her, said that she was stillborn, like had those fake nurses to say that she was stillborn, took the baby onto international waters, and that's the last time we saw her.
Was the baby the girl that shows up when Mephisto, before he snaps his fingers to wipe out the continuity of their marriage, at the baby being like, by the way, the kid's still alive, but never existed?
So that's a possibility. It also could have been the soul of Annie. Saying, hey, you could have, like, May might be gone, but you could have me, because in Renew Your Vows, it is established under Jody Hauser's run that May died at childbirth and was a stillborn, and then Annie came a little later.
The other thing that somebody posted in another group, the Fantastic Four group, saying, because Franklin Richards has a habit of doing this, what if he sensed the trauma of the Spider-Clone saga coming to an end and Mary Jane's childbirth going badly, snaps his godlike powers, and the baby is switched out with the stillborn, and it's actually safe and well someplace else in Franklin Richards' weird godlike creation of stuff.
But isn't Franklin like 8 during that time? Like, what 8-year-old has the mental capacity, like emotional capacity, to do this? And
but he did that to Valerie when she died back during the post secret when
but that's his sister.
Right, but
that's his sister. That's not his uncle's best friend's wife.
I'm just saying, you never know with the way Marvel writes stuff. And don't forget, who's writing Fantastic Four right now? Dan Slott.
He's probably going to listen to this and get very, very upset, but I don't want him to ever touch Mayday ever again. He's done enough. It's good. We're good. Yeah.
Drew, where can people find you?
I'm just still blown away by that ice cold. It's like I opened the window right now. Ooh, it's cold in here. That got frosty. It's man, you should nickname you Sub-Zero. I'm on Facebook. You should look me up. Drew Mallow on Facebook. Ghostbusterman 1984 on Instagram. I write for Screen Rant, so you can look me up. Drew Mallow Screen Rant. This was the hardest I've ever had to do, being absolutely silent. But Chris, God, I have to respect your show. So,
and the other comic book podcast I do, which covers the Goth Girl, Cassie Hack, and Vlad over at Goth Girl Horror, a Hack/podcast I do with Charcy Lux. We are returning to the regular ongoing after doing multiple miniseries of that book. And then you can also pick up a copy of my own graphic novel, Vlada, A Dracula Tale. We gender swap the entire cast of Dracula. We'll be back next week with more Inferno nuttiness on Spectacular Spider-Man Sal Buscema Era podcast.
Cool beans.
Keep it sizzling.